Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. It's me, Chris Denson, your host, and we are doing this again. In case you guys are tuning in for the first time, the show covers all things innovation, ideas, creativity, smart people doing smart things, and the buck does not stop here. So I'm going to introduce my special guest co-host. Say hello, Bianca.
Kerr. Hi there.
Kerr.
It's Carr, actually. It's
no,
Scottish.
No.
It's Scottish.
How do you have a Scottish last name?
Because I got Scottish ancestry. I know you can't tell looking at me, half Indian, part English, Scottish,
Canadian,
South African,
Venetian,
Canadian, Italian. I really confuse people at the airport because I have an Italian first name, Scottish last name, Canadian passport.
So they just check your bag every time just to be sure.
Pretty much.
Like, come in this room. Come on. This is the first time I'm seeing you without a hat. That's also weird.
Yeah, I do wear the company hat a lot, but today it was a little.
And the company being?
Muzerk.
Yes.
It is a music licensing company. We source music from independent artists around the world, and then we license it to people like yourself, networks, production companies, anybody who's creating video content.
I still want to create that Denson sound library.
You can.
I'm going to go. Brrr.
I feel like we could work something
ching,
out.
Ching, ching, ching. That was a cash register, by the way. The whole thing was a cash register.
That was a cash register.
Yeah.
So every time that you would check out, that is
yes,
the sound.
Exactly. No change.
Right. Okay.
So enough about you.
Thank you. I feel like you were so interested. I can feel the interest.
I'm genuinely interested.
Okay,
we'll come back to more interesting things
fair
about
enough,
you. But however, Roman Sunder. Say hello.
Hola, hello.
You want to get into the mic a little bit, or are you laid back
show
chilling?
Back.
You know.
Oh, see.
I gotta say, I was a little intimidated when I knew you were coming today because I was like, "That guy's always stylish." You know, I try, but I was like, I went through about three outfit changes this morning because I was like, I gotta stay on par. So I appreciate you toning it down this time, but still, you know, keeping it together. So give the people a little bit of a 101 on who Roman Sunder is.
Wow. Gosh, I'm Russian originally. Immigrant from Russia.
What's going on here at this table?
I feel like we're playing like what's that ancestry show with celebrities where it's like they find out like things that their ancestors have done like 100 years ago and get really embarrassed.
Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly.
It was bad for Ben.
Your family owned slaves. So, like they did?
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm sorry. All right, so you're Russian, yes?
Yeah, and our family immigrated, like a lot of families. We had like less than $100 and I grew up in LA in Orange County. And hustled like a lot of people. And I lived in New York for a while, and so I'm back here in LA now.
Nice. How old were you when your family made the move?
I was six.
Nice. Did you go back? Do you have memories of, you know, the early days? Like, what are some of your Russian memories?
Yeah. Wow. None of the kids ever wanted to sleep over at my house because we had Russian food for breakfast, which was like the last kind of food you ever want to eat in the breakfast.
What's Russian breakfast?
It's like pickled herring. It's like tomatoes with onions. It's nothing like you ever want to eat unless you had to grow up with it. So everyone else kind of slept over at the other kid's house that had like McDonald's in the morning.
Nice. Well,
I mean, I've had borscht. I had a Russian friend growing up, and I mean, I had it when I had my wisdom teeth out, so that's why I had it. But it's not that bad. All I know is privet. That's all I got.
That's good. And любовь. And love.
And love. Любовь.
Любовь.
Okay.
I'm completely outranked here. I have no Russian references. I'm especially culinary references. But I'm going to skip ahead to your current day. A few years later, now the founder, creator, CEO. I don't know what title you go by for Patou, which I like to quietly pronounce Patui, just because it's fun to Patui, especially because I freestyle in the shower.
Yeah.
And I spit hot. Never mind. No, but tell us a little bit about Patou and that as an organization, as a movement, as I'd like to look at it as, and you know, just your vision on it thus far. And then we'll ask you some more questions.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, thanks for taking an interest in it. And I was so stoked to come on the show.
Appreciate it.
You had me sweating. I was the one that came in here sweating. What are you talking about?
I just got here. I got here early. I even kept my hat on because I haven't had a haircut. And this is probably the first time I've recorded a show with a hat on. Now, yeah. So,
you didn't have to tell anyone that, though.
I like to paint a visual for the audience
so
they know
what's
going on here.
Yeah. So, gosh, I mean, Patou was just the passion project. It was never supposed to be a company. And I think the reason why we started it was because there was nowhere else to go. You know, something kind of growing up in Orange County is that you're always around like surf culture and action sports culture. And just found that as kind of in my entrepreneurial career, like I've always attracted to like youth culture, whether it was music or whether it was fashion or whether it was sports or whatever it was. And everywhere I went, like whether it was like an advertising age or like a business event or like a women's wear daily or yep. like even like a fast company, I felt like it was like just the wrong people talking about the wrong things. It was so corporate and it was so commercial. And then there's no community because like the person that was, you know, on stage speaking, like spoke, and then everyone else is trying to pitch them something and
right.
they never came
what
back.
What is the wrong person talking about the wrong thing? I mean, it's a good point, but I want, like, I would love for you to like explain a little bit more from that perspective.
To me, it's somebody that just wants to be on a stage, you
right.
know, someone looking for attention. You know, so for me, or to highlight their role or for PR purposes, you know, for me, I think that life's about storytelling, you know, and so a lot of the best storytellers are the ones that don't want to go in front of everybody else. So like a big part of our jobs is like searching out talent and searching out those storytellers. And instead of giving like their boilerplate PR or public persona, like let's get like into the nerve and let's get a little uncomfortable. Because that's where the truth is.
Right.
Right? It's not like polished for, made for TV.
Pushing the envelope.
Well, Patel, the environment in and of itself is foreign to most people, right? And I would love for you to talk about that. But I think about that discomfort that you just talked about is really interesting because it does shake you out of your comfort zone, like literally. And so now you're kind of starting from scratch in some ways. And I know you guys have worked with Navy SEALs and brought them on board, made people do crazy stuff. But, you know, kind of explain like the environment and how you kind of break that, you know, that shell of people kind of just coming out with their truth.
Yeah. You know, for us, even the reason why it exists, I think has a purpose because all of us need like a mission in our lives. And our mission was that, if you look at like the global population, 60% of it is under 30. And when you look at developing countries like India and Africa and Asia, it's up to 70% in some regions. And so, you know, that's just crazy because when you also look at our culture and look at the headlines of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, it's all like the Snapchats and it's Instagrams and the GoPros. It's like, you know, like youth culture is like before it was a silent majority. Before social media, but now it's like a silent, a vocal majority, you know, so vocal that not only companies are being overthrown, but look what's happening around the world with the revolutions, like countries are getting overthrown by young people. So we just thought, can we swear on this show?
Yeah, you can swear all you want to.
We just thought it was fucked up.
Do more. Keep going.
We just thought it was messed up.
We appreciate potty mouth.
That the future of our global population, the future of our culture, the future of our economy is in the hands of this next generation. But how could there be no Davos for the head people and companies, not just of countries, but like of the, you know, the Samsungs and of the GoPros and of the kind of Virgin Galactics,
right.
You know, and a lot of the members, like, you know, corporate organizations, CEOs and CMOs have more influence and impact than a lot of global heads of state. If you're below like the 15th global head of state, then like the CMO of MasterCard actually has like a bigger impact on like what's happening in payment systems around the world versus right. like the president of Portugal.
That's very true. Yeah, and I mean, that's an interesting perspective. How did you, because it sounds like you're getting to the root of global culture, but through the lens of marketers and brands. Kind of explain that combination because it's not the first thing you think of when you think about global change, right? And how to change culture. But the fact that you're taking MasterCard or Coca-Cola and Shaun White and like, all right, here's like, go for it.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the unique things that I've been able to do is I was part of this organization called movements.org where we actually found 30 of the largest leaders of movements against violence and oppression, right? So what that means is the largest movement that ever happened was in Colombia called Million Voices Against the FARC, led by Oscar Morales, where it helped 2 million people protested in Bogota, 12 million people across the world to help lead to the downfall of the FARC, which are the communist rebels in Colombia. It was because of that, now the communist rebels don't have nearly as much power as they did. We brought together 30 people like that from Tahrir Square to and the Shahab 6 movement, all the way to what was happening in Saudi Arabia and women's right to drive. And so we kind of saw like where the movement was happening, and a lot of the movement was happening was with corporations, whether it was the Twitters or whether it was the Facebooks or whether it was the Cokes or whether it was the MasterCards. The presidents were just stuck in like of countries and their State Departments are just kind of stuck in bureaucracy. And they actually reach out to the private sector and say, we know that we don't have the organization or the staying power or the resources to be able to make the type of impact in such a quick amount of time that right. companies can. So we believe that it's companies that are going to change the world, not countries. And so if that's the case, then a lot of companies just don't get it. You know, so instead of us, and so our job is to kind of like try to create this kind of global missionary culture to big companies, you know, and have them kind of see the world from a different perspective. It's not a silver bullet, but like I'd rather preach to the unindoctrinated
right.
than preach to the choir. Like it's easy to preach to the choir. Like everyone's drinking that Kool-Aid. But for me, it's people that like have huge impact, but that don't get it, that are like super, that's where for me, like where the action is. Does that make sense at all?
No, it totally makes sense. I'm curious where, like, how you find the fit between these companies that often will have different self-interest in maybe different countries. Where's that fit? Like, how do you sort of decide how the pieces all fit together at a conference or creating those connections between the CEO of MasterCard and the head of Coca-Cola?
Yeah, you know, it's, gosh, our commonalities bind us more than our differences. And so for us, it's never about, you know, so like what we do is a little bit of a Jedi mind trick in the sense that we don't ever lead with like big brands or logos. You know, if you look at a logo like GE, you don't really think of like Beth Comstock or Linda, like they're just the sweetest women and most compassionate women. And when you think of a company like Coke, you think like of Emmanuel, you know, you don't think of the big logo. And so for us, it's really about creating friendships. You know, we kind of create a disarming environment so that people don't like come out with like puffed up chests that I'm like the CEO of like whatever. It's like, who cares? We live like in a different culture. Right. You know, what I care about is, you know, I'm sure there's this 95% backstory to your life that's put you in this position. And that's one of hustle and one of creativity and one of doing things differently. So we first try to connect with people like at their heart. Like going to create friendships. And that's our biggest job. And that's our biggest compliment.
Right.
When people say things about Patel or about Worlds, it's really about, wow, I felt like there was like a community. You know, because once you are able to connect with people's hearts and you connect with their souls, then only then can you connect with their mind.
It sounds great. and I think about like in practice, right? Especially because I like to think about the journey from idea to actuality. You know, if you had this vision after being involved with movements and you go like, all right, I think I can get a few companies to come together and a few artists and celebrities to all intermingle and governments and all this. Like, what are the steps or what's in your background that actually makes you the guy to actually, you know, to do it at such a high performing level?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I never thought it should be me.
And what makes you so special?
Yeah. And if honestly, if it existed, I would have probably joined if I could get in.
Right.
But you know, if not me, then who? You know, there's no one else that was doing it. And I think it is kind of really cool that, you know, what was one of my weaknesses when I was younger, when I was Russian and I was like 14 in elementary, like in junior high, and like I was like a little bit of an outsider, and that made me different. Like in my high school of 2,000 kids, there were like two African American guys and two Jewish kids. You can guess.
Shout out to those guys.
Yeah, you can guess which one.
Where are they now?
Right. And so it's. I just felt like being an outsider and being different, you know, gives me a perspective of the underdog. A little bit.
Right.
So I think like me and our team kind of come at it from that perspective. So I think we're doing it for the right reasons. And that's one of, you know, it's not revenue driven. It's really mission driven. So I think that's the major reason why we're kind of the right ones. And then growing up, my background is I've worked in finance and I've worked in social impact organizations. I've been an entrepreneur a couple of times. So I feel I've got this kind of unique perspective. Sometimes I'd see things from a global perspective, other times just the hustle perspective of getting a company or project started. You know, whenever you put, I remember our first event, like I was afraid if I would have nightmares, like would anyone actually show up?
Yeah, that's what, I have that every time I get ready to record one of these shows. Yeah,
I have that every time I have a friend over.
But it's interesting, like hustle is an interesting thing. You don't necessarily associate hustle with Orange County. Right. Like, you know, so where was that instilled in you as a quality, as a skill, as a passion, you know, and how did it come to life?
Yeah, I think hustle was instilled in me through failure. You know, just failure sucks.
You're like, that's true. I don't want to do this anymore.
You know, and I remember when I tried to get my first job, I applied to 73 investment banks and I got rejected by 74. I got two rejection letters from JP Morgan.
They really didn't like you.
Seriously, like, Roman, we do not want you here.
Twice.
Don't show up.
And then I remember.
Has JP Morgan shown up to your to any of your events?
Actually, the Kristen Lemke, who's the she doesn't know this yet.
Now she will.
Now she probably will.
Gets out of the bag.
And she's great. I'm just waiting for the right time. And then my second time that I failed was I tried to get a job at MTV. Like, that was my dream to work at MTV. But, you know, I couldn't even get a PA job there. And so now Bob Pittman is part of our group, which is kind of cool.
Right. I was a PA for MTV Canada, so... Just saying, I don't know what my trajectory looks like.
It's looking good.
Yeah, but that was Canada. No, I'm just kidding. Not to poop on Canada, because everybody wants to go there now. That's we'll get into that later. But but no, that's great. So it was kind of like, I don't like this feeling. I'm gonna keep trying to find it. And I think that's also grit, right? It's also the ability to apply 70 plus times to, you know, for jobs. Yes, it's necessity, obviously, but at the same time, it's like, you know, being adaptive and being able to explore other avenues. I mean, you know, my early career was definitely, I did the PA thing. I worked at Paramount. And then like when that, then I got my first writing job and then I had just come from Michigan. So I got fired from my writing job. They fired the entire writing staff. And I was like, you can just fire people like that? That's not cool. And so, and I just ended up like trying to do other things mainly to make sure I had food on the table. But that's kind of where the hustle came from, was like, I'm going to be as adaptable as I need to be to survive. And you know, you've been able to see that from very different perspectives, from an immigrant's perspective, from a finance perspective, from, you know, global culture perspective. And speaking of global culture, look at my transitions. Worlds. See how I did that, everybody?
Wow. Yeah, that was really impressive.
Can I get some applause? Or...
Yeah, his arms are out. Like, you should be in here. You should see this.
Doing a circle clap.
Yeah. Oh, nice. That's fancier than I expected. But let's talk about Worlds, because Patau has kind of evolved or, you know, grown into a second event, but you can explain it probably far better than I can.
Yeah, yeah. It's new. So, you know, we're kind of, you know, steering our course and trying.
Worlds
trying,
with a Z, by the way.
With it's a like Z.
Little hip hop.
That's
in
right.
There.
That's right.
With a Z.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Nice. Good shout out. So there are two separate companies, right? So Patau, it's a small community. It's only 250 people and it's only been capped. And it expands all 70 industries. And to be a member, you have to be the CEO or the CMO of a top 5 company in your industry or a cultural iconic person, whether it's a Kelly Slater for Surf or a Sean White, as you mentioned.
Or Chris Denson.
Or Chris.
Yeah.
And what our mission is really simple. Like in terms of missions, like, what do you guys, people ask us all the time, what do you do, right? What happens? And we help create these projects and these collaborations that have never been done before. We call it doing the NBDB. So, for example, we'll help a partner, iHeart, with Discovery, with GoPro, to create the platform for Racing Extinction, which was like the number one social impact movie of the year. We'll help Janelle Monáe partner with Pepsi to kick off the Super Bowl halftime show. And so it's all about action. Like, we don't think that like ideas are good enough unless you can actually attach it to your business, or else you're going to forget about it.
Right.
Right. So what we found is when these projects were happening, that it was actually their teams, not the C-level executives, that are actually doing the work.
True.
The C-level executives are like just blessing the deals and moving on. And then it's actually their teams, kind of the directors, the VPs, the SVPs, that are actually doing the heavy lifting. And we're like we need those people.
Yeah, 100%.
How do we get those people? Because with Patel, it's intimacy. It's only 250. So we need to create a place that's for Patel members and their teams.
Got it. Cool.
So that's what Worlds is. And so that's why we think that Worlds is kind of like Patel on steroids. Because...
So from an actuality perspective, right, when I walk into the doors of Worlds, what am I going to see, feel, do that's distinctively different from Patel?
Yeah, I mean, first you might cross a bridge. You might not even go through a door.
Oh, all right. How about a moat?
Maybe a tunnel?
Yeah, exactly.
Underground?
You might crawl under barbed wire.
Yeah. Okay, to go through the Navy SEAL course first just to get in.
No, but it's cool. So, it is like every bit of it is an experience. It's kind of, is that kind of the goal?
Yeah. I mean, our job is kind of create your like best business day on earth.
Right.
Can't compete with the personal day.
It's true.
But the business we can.
Why? So Patel has been around for what, 7 years? Eight years?
Yeah, we're going to our eighth year.
Why is now the time for a Worlds in your world?
Believe it or not, it's taken us 7 years to just get Patel right. And that's been like, I've never worked on something, and our team's never worked on something like more than that. Like, we have like more obsession. We put in more hours. We're more focused than ever. And it's still taken us like 7 years, you know? And with Worlds, if we felt like it was like we finally have enough structure and stability.
What constitutes getting it right? Because it sounds like, every article or thing that I've read or heard about is like, it sounds like it was right, a few years back. But I think as a leader, sometimes you get like a little bit of perfection vision, or there's something that you want to tweak. What were the things that you wanted to sort of tweak and make right and before you felt like you could take that breath?
Yeah. I mean, I think like a lot of people, one of the cool things that, our team gets to see is we get to work with some of the most like inspiring and successful people. And so there are certain commonalities. That commonality is like what I kind of call like going off, which is like OHF. If you have your obsession in a healthy way and you put in more hours than anybody else and you're focused, like you can be your hero, right? And so for us to really do that, especially on focus, if we lost, like I meet so many entrepreneurs, they got like four or five companies. I can barely do one.
right. Exactly.
Yeah. So for us, it really has taken us like 7 years where we can move some of our focus and our team to doing something else rather than delivering the most inspiring experience for the most influential and jaded people in the world.
It's very true.
Jaded.
That's great. But that's interesting, right? Because, the person who's building the four or five companies, usually they're building something that's on autopilot and it's a product or service that, hopefully if you do it right, it's passive income and starts to work on its own. But in your world, because it's such a human element to it, and you're like, literally touching people, emotionally.
Literally,
I don't know about physically.
Literally,
I know. So you see how
literally
fix it though?
Touching people.
Are you literally touching? I don't know. You don't have to confess anything on this show. I think that human perspective means that it takes a little bit more care, right? Is that level of intimacy that you want to create? What do you feel like has been your biggest success so far in either Patel or Worlds? I know Worlds hasn't happened yet, but what do you feel like is like, it's kind of our crown jewel moment?
Wow, there's been a couple. There's been a couple moments that, like, I don't really believe in luck. Like, I believe you put yourself in a position to get a break.
Luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Exactly.
Just wrote it in a pitch yesterday.
So we've had a couple of moments like that. Like one of our moments is when it was a passion project. Patel was a passion project for 2 years, and then we weren't going to do it. And I had this really chance meeting with the Dalai Lama's emissary for peace. And because of that, it still wasn't going to happen. And then through this serendipitous, unbelievable thing, like we ended up getting His Holiness to come to Patel in our third year. If that didn't happen, like things could have been very different in my life and with our job, with our company.
Right.
So that was definitely a moment. And then even this year, it was like a moment where we got Mike Bloomberg to come down. And now like the moment is that we get so many people, a little bit like Allen and Company, just kind of make a little, like a kind of their trip to Patau and kind of be with us. And now kind of having that stability is probably the second success moment for us, which happened this year.
That's awesome.
Knowing somebody's going to show up. Time.
Right.
You're not like holding the balloons, like waiting for.
And it's not like we're. It's not like they're
balloons.
I don't know. I'm just picturing someone at like a birthday party and nobody shows up. Like
nice.
Just like
go.
A sad birthday party.
Balloon starts to deflate slowly.
By the way, we do have like a 40-person ambassador team that does have balloons, so you'd be really happy to see.
See, I did my research.
Did you? You like went to the balloon store yesterday?
When preparation met opportunity.
Such a lucky. Right. I was gonna do a Dolly Parton joke with the Dolly, but then the time has passed, so I'll forgo that. Why do you care so much? You know, a lot of people have ideas like that, and I've had tons of conversations with people who attend conferences and be like, oh, "I wish they did this," or "I wish this happened." And they might be entrepreneurs, but like, why did you care enough to like, you know, put blood, sweat, tears, and you know, your reputation on the line for it?
Yeah, I mean, my thing is that it's kind of that old saying: it's like it's not what you do or what you say; it's like how you make people feel. You know, and I love it that when people have an interaction with me or our team, like I want them to have a positive feeling about that. And because that can open up like this kind of like this hope and opportunity and kind of a mind shift for people, especially that are in kind of their own tunnels, their own rabbit hole. Now, to be able to do that with the most influential people in the world and help steer the decision that they make for the right reasons is a huge honor and a responsibility. So it's actually something that we have to do. Like, it's not something we can even just choose not to do anymore. And that's kind of what I talk about with our team is that, you know, if not, you know, if we didn't do it, there wouldn't be anyone else. And if it was fostered by somewhere else, somebody else, they wouldn't have the perspective to do it. There really isn't anyone else to do this other than us. So we really have to, we have that sense of responsibility. And I try to make things pretty dramatic, but it's like when someone is going to save the future of the world, I'm not saying we are. I'm just saying that every person like has the potential to have their energy impact what happens like every day.
Right.
And for us to be able to do that for people is like, what else? There's nothing else we'd rather do with our time.
I've seen you out and about South by Southwest, CES. How are you perceived outside of Patel, right? Because, you know, A, you have to probably pitch it to some people who don't know what it is. B, you know, and then it sounds like a conference, right? You have to like, and especially if you're trying to attract that person or that entity to it. But I've also kind of seen like what appeared to be like the royal carpet rolled out for Roman in a sense. Because but I would imagine there's a high level of respect for, you know, what you've been able to do through, you know, your endeavors. But, you know, what is your personal brand look like outside of Patau when you're in these other environments?
Well, I never even think about that. Like, I think if I grateful enough, I'm super grateful just to get an invite to go anywhere. I think of like when we host people, like how we can treat them like heads of state. Like we try to treat everyone we meet like they're a head of state, to let them know that they have powers, superpowers beyond themselves, you know? So I more think about like how to treat other people than like how other people treat me. Honestly, I don't even think about it.
You're a pretty amazing guy.
No.
You're going to start getting a lot of Facebook invitations from Chris
exactly.
to like all of his events. He's like, hey, you wanted an invitation. You're honored.
He says you'd
like,
be grateful.
Come on.
I said I'd be grateful. I didn't say I would show up. But, you know, I think I'm going to go back to your childhood for a second because I think about when some kids grow up awkward, you know, kind of feeling awkward, feeling misplaced. They don't turn out the right way or the way we would want them to, right? Bad things happen, suicide, depression, you know, it feels like that very easily could have happened given your set of circumstances. What was it that kind of kept you on the positive side of, you know, of Roman Sunder?
Well, I mean, I think that it's, I think for all of us, for a lot of people, that a lot of it has to do with your family. And my mom and my sister, they've been every single Patau thing that we've done. And part of like thing we did this year at Patau was kind of for my mom, because I even think about like these iconic people that I've met, like the people that have impressed me the most. And it's really kind of been my mom. Like my mom was 29 years old and she was like a happy and hopeful young woman. And one day because of like the bigotry, the anti-Semitism, the hopelessness in Russia, she decided to, with like no language, with like no money, to go to another country and to go to another land with literally nothing. Like, to me, that's like a harrowing journey, right?
Yeah.
And so I think if it wasn't for my mom and like her resilience, like she's like kind of like my role model, kind of my hero in that sense. And so I'm like, I'm still, I don't see how she's done her stuff. And so what we do is just like work, and I get to go to a meeting like and hang out here, and that's work. Like, for her, work was like having to like be an engineer and like learn the language.
Right. You're like every parent's dream right now. You're just like,
my boy.
I just love my mom. I owe her everything. You're my hero. No, it's super sweet. I mean, like, it's amazing. No, yeah. Good.
Yeah. I mean, resiliency, it seems like that's kind of a thread, right? Just, you know, whether it's the 70 plus applications or the 7-8 years of like, let me try to get this right, you know, and like, now let's create something completely different or in tandem. There's definitely a lot of resiliency that has to be had in that journey.
Yeah. And Chris, I mean, the thing is that, honestly, it's not even my story. It's like, it's the only commonality to people's stories for success. Like, the biggest thing that I think that people will discover over a world is the secrets for success. You know, and those secrets aren't so secret. But the problem is with our culture right now is that everyone sees everyone's highlight reels on social media.
Headline porn.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's FOMO. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's like whether it's a great TED speaker that's already like intimidating because they're a TED speaker and then they say how great they are, or whether it's an athlete or an artist saying they're already intimidating because they're an artist and people are like, oh, look at this person. And then they talk about how great they are. I think instead, like, every one of them, if you kind of pull back the onion, will say that, like, I had insecurities and I was different and I had a lot of failure, but I just had this like really passion and this obsession and nothing was going to get in my way. And like, when you sit down with Rob Dyrdek, he'll tell you the same story. When you talk with Shaun White, he'll talk about when he was like the tomato and like what people thought about him when mm-hmm. he was snowboarding. And when you talk about Kelly Slater, the family that he grew up in. And when you talk about, you know, so many different like iconic people, they actually have like a tougher road than most people that I meet that are just like day to day.
It's so true. I've done 130 plus of these things, you know, conversations, and a good majority of them have like some tremendous pain points. You know, one guy fractured his spine like the week he started his company and had a bunch of people relying on him. Sugar Ray Leonard talked about how he was molested, you know, as a tween. You know, Michelle Thaler from NASA was bullied as a kid. Now she's like the deputy communications director of NASA. Like, you know, it is this interesting duality, you know, to create these superheroes. Yeah. Like Bruce Wayne, and you know, gets his parents killed and now he's Batman.
It's true. I mean, actually, another big commonality of the most successful people is that they have a chip on their shoulder. Something happened in their youth that gave them this chip on their shoulder and they have something to prove.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of this adage. People see like these billionaires and they're like, oh, they've got it made. Like, honestly, I wouldn't want to be born a billionaire. Like, there's only one way to go from there. Like,
yeah.
Oh, no. You hear of all these, like, horror stories of all these problems behind the scene, and you're like, I don't know if I want that. Like,
well, that's the other thing. It's the perception of whether it's abundance or success, right. You know. And I'm curious, I'm sure you probably have come across it, but the person who didn't have the, you know, the traumatic incident or the traumatic circumstances, you know, what can they learn from, you know, a Shaun White's success or, you know, whomever it is that's on that stage? It's like, this is the shitty part of what, you know, my experience, and this is the chip on my shoulder, and this is how I flipped it. But if I, you know, had a relatively mediocre upbringing, like, where does that passion or that tool or switch for success come?
Yeah, I would say that it's one, like, the most important thing by far is find your obsession, right? Because when you find your obsession and it becomes part of your life, when you talk to like a Tony Hawk, he'll say, because of his, look at Muhammad Ali, because of his obsession for his craft, they can be champions in their lives. You know? And so the most important thing is find that obsession. And then, especially if it's unpopular, because like right now, if you're a baseball player and you found out your obsession was to be a baseball player, like there's a lot of other baseball players to compete against.
Yeah.
But if you're Tony Hawk and your obsession is skateboarding and there's no other skateboarders and it's illegal, then you become like a Tony Hawk, right? And now there's more skateboarders than there are like youth baseball players.
Crazy.
Right? So do things that are unpopular. also, just because something's unpopular and your friends tell you no or that's stupid, like that's like generally a good sign.
I get told I'm stupid all the time.
Stupid.
Well, you dummy.
Oh. I'll caveat two things.
Asterisks, just a little.
Disclaimer.
Two really important asterisks. One is when you find your obsession, make sure it's something that you could actually generate revenue out of at some point. Right. So, for instance, if your obsession, like Mike Bloomberg actually said, if your obsession is to create a garage door opener that only works from 2,500 miles away, like, is that really like useful?
Right.
Like, even if you do obsess over it, like, is anyone going to buy it? Right. So, is anyone ever going to pay for what you're doing? Right. That's a really important question someone has to ask themselves after they say they're obsessed. Like, I meet a lot of people that say, like, what are you good at? And they say, I'm a relationship person. I'm like, okay, like. Like, how are you going to be the best in the world at that? Would kind of be my second question.
Right.
And my second point is the five people that you surround yourself with. And you're a product of two things in your life. And one is the things that you let into your ears. And two are the five people you surround yourself with. And so I don't think anyone in your life has the permission to give you like negative things in your life, whether it's your parents or whether it's your family members or your coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you really need to curate your life. So you have this balance of these five friends that kind of compile like who you are. And two, you know, if you read the 6 o'clock news every day, like you're going to become like the 6 o'clock news. You know, it's the 6 o'clock murder report. It's the 6 o'clock, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're projecting to everyone that you meet, like what happened in Turkey or what happened in Nice. Like you can't not look at, you can't not deal with that and absorb it. But you also need to find a way to really impact everyone you come in contact with in a positive way as well.
That's amazing. And I think that's spot on. I go back to the first point, and I think about the idea that, you know, you need the 2,500 foot, garage door opener idea. Some of us do, right? Because when that fails, and then you have the second idea, is like, okay, you're showing that the trial and error part of it is okay. Because some people hit the one failure and it is so, you know, they're so repulsed by it that they don't do anything else. And I've seen friends of mine do that, you know, like, that was very uncomfortable. I'm never going down that road again, period. Versus like, keep going and eventually you'll find a new obsession, right?
Yeah, I mean, like I love quotes, and so for me, like that favorite quote is like Winston Churchill, who's like one of my heroes, and it's like success is going from failure to failure without losing any enthusiasm. It's those people that get like really excited about getting a no. Do you like what's wrong with them? They're the ones that succeed.
Yeah, I refer to myself as relentlessly optimistic. Like I'm just like, oh, well, what if we did it this way? No, well, what if we did that? Bianca, do you have a favorite quote?
Do I have a favorite quote? No, I should have come with one. I'm not.
He's just been spitting fire all day. So I'm like,
my dad will be really upset because one of his, you know, he uses quotes all the time from Winston Churchill. The only one that came to mind was something about like, it was something about how you get drunk at a bar, like tomorrow you'll still be ugly or something. I knew I was going to butcher it. Like, it's like, I may be drunk, ma'am, but tomorrow you'll still be ugly and tomorrow I'll be sober.
Like, I've got one for you. I'll give you one of mine.
Okay, thanks.
Especially since, you know, India.
especially
now it's about to be racial.
India.
But just, it's a Dalai Lama quote.
Okay.
And it's not getting what you want is a wonderful stroke of luck.
Preparedness.
All right. Love. So you've obviously absorbed, you're well-read, you're a good listener. I was going to say well-listened, but that doesn't make sense. The show is called Innovation Crush. I'm curious as to what's out there that you actually have a innovation crush on. It may be something that you see a lot of stuff from brands and from, you know, influential people, but maybe there's something that's all, you know, kind of outside of the Patel walls or within it. You tell me, like, I'm curious as to what your innovation crush is.
Yeah. I mean, my innovation crush is, I didn't think about it before, but I'm glad you asked me that. That's such a good question. Is I go for the heart right away. So I don't think of marketing, I don't think of media, I don't think of industries, I just think we're humans, right? So all that really means, how can you like hit our heart? So when I think of heart, I actually think the best way you can connect to people's heart is like what I call an industry, like alternative reality experiences, like these AR or alternative reality games. It's kind of a little bit like what's happening with Pokemon.
Right.
But in a very different way. A better example, one of my favorite examples, if you guys ever saw that book back in the movie back in the day called The Game, mm-hmm. with Michael Douglas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that that like you're kind of the star in the movie, but you don't know it, but everyone else is kind of conspiring to create these like epic moments for you?
They're kind of doing another movie like that with the Franco.
Yeah, it's like
brother.
Never something. Yeah. I saw the poster at the.
Yeah, they follow like a game and they win points till the end and it's like dangerous. They might die. Sounds like kind of like the game.
Yeah. Hopefully, but you don't die though.
Yeah.
Actually, the poster is pretty creative. It's actually like it's your vision if you were looking out from inside a screen. So there's two people looking at you. All the copy is written backwards.
I think Emma Roberts is in it.
Yeah.
It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I love. My friend actually proposed to his fiance, or girlfriend at the time, now his wife, through doing this alternate reality, is that when they arrived, they were actually, they went to New York for this kind of day of honeymoons, or this day, and they first had lunch at the Standard Grill, and sitting next to them was this couple, fake couple, they're actors, and they're saying they just got a call from like the local like Kiss FM station, and saying they got tickets to like their favorite artist, which was... Chili Peppers, Anthony Kiedis. And it was Anna's, that's kind of his girlfriend, that's her favorite band. And these fake actors said, oh, we can't go because we have other plans. Who should we give them to? And they said it loud enough for Anna to start freaking out. At the table and they go, and then they go, look, it looks like you might. Do you know the Red Hot Chili Peppers? She's like, oh, my God, they're my favorite band.
Have you heard of them before? This is a really obscure band.
She said, they're my favorite band. And so they go, well, since you love them so much, why don't you take our tickets, right? So now they get these tickets and imagine like that. And so they move on and then they see like a limo pull up and a guy that looks like he's been partying till 5 a.m. gets out of the limo and goes, oh, you look like such a beautiful couple. I've got this limo for another 8 hours. Why don't you guys take it for the rest of the day?
Nice.
Just having to have this limo for the next 8 hours.
Your friend just is ruining relationships for everybody right now.
Yeah. And then they end up uptown in Central Park at the Boathouse, and someone they run into says, I used to work on the street. They run into him. To Paul, who's the boyfriend, and they said, I used to work for you, and because you, with Anna there, I used to work for you, you gave me such a generous bonus that you allowed me to marry my wife. And I don't know any other way to thank you. Can I meet you to go to like this Oak Room at the plaza to buy you a drink at least? And they do, and then that's where this the proposal happened. And so that to me is like an example of for me. Imagine what can you do to create the most memorable day on earth for somebody.
Like what did that you do for to the wedding my... then? I just like set the bar so
it was a 3-day wedding in St. Barts.
Okay. There we go.
And that's my innovation crush.
That's awesome.
I'm really curious about you mentioned the five people that you keep, you know, that you keep around you and sort of listen in your ear. Who are your five people?
Yeah, I mean my five are Paul, that guy.
Keep him.
Jason in New York, Eric in Orange County, Bobby here in LA, and Sean here in LA. And that's five. And then I got other friends.
And your mom.
And then my mom.
And your mom.
Awesome. Take this all in. Let's all just breathe the conversation in for a second. Right, everybody?
Yeah.
And complete this phrase for me. Innovation to me is.
Oh, it's my turn.
Your turn.
Innovation to me is changing perception.
That's good.
I like it.
How do we look at things differently for the first time? Whether it's transportation, travel, social giving.
How do we look at things differently for the first time? Because we look at things so much, so often.
Yeah.
Like, how do you find? Actually, part of my tattoo says, "Change the way you look at things, and the things you look at will begin to change."
Oh.
And it's just like that's like a principle I live by. It's like, all right, how can I think about this moment, this thing, this problem differently
from a different perspective? Yeah. And I mean, understand it and make other people. That's the struggle, I think, is making other people see what you're seeing differently, and sort of it's almost like one of those. You know, those images that change, and then when it changes, you can't not see it that way anymore. I kind of feel like it's when you change somebody's perception, they all of a sudden they're like, how did I not see that before? Why did I not think of that? Why that we were doing this in this way? Or we might even think of something like Uber. You know, for the longest time, we only imagined a certain way for transportation, and now we couldn't imagine not having that in our
well,
pockets.
That happens, like, even in human performance, right? Like, you think about the first person to break a 5-minute mile, you know, it was thought that it was humanly impossible right. to run any faster. And then once someone did it, like, thousands of people did it.
Or hit a high note.
Right, exactly.
You couldn't imagine. Yeah. You couldn't imagine somebody being able to sort of have that range.
Now, Roman, you've had some time to think. Innovation to me is...
Well, I was thinking, like, your example is so good because I remember, like, living in New York, like, all the bridges open up, you know, so boats can pass through them. But in Buenos Aires, they open to the side.
Oh.
You know, so it's like, yeah. You're right. If you just see things in a different way, there's, like, so many ways of, like, doing that.
Totally.
I love that. For me, innovation, like, I think of, like, who the biggest innovators are, like an Astro Teller, like a Google X. And one, you know, what we call... doing the NBDB, so what's never been done before, like what you said, whether it's like hit a note that's higher than ever before. And then the other thing is, how, when you do something, you know, how can you do it 10 times better? Because I think a lot of times people try to do things just, let's just make it better, you know, or let's have like a marginally better.
Right.
But, you know, but if those are like the where you set like your cap, then that's as high as you're going to reach, right? But if you say like, how can we do this exponentially better? Then I think like it's like you more like shoot for the moon and like end up in the stars, right? So I think it's like whether it's something you're already doing, you know, challenge like yourself to do it in an order of magnitude better,
right?
You know, everything that you do, or do something that, you know, and this is pretty profound and it's so hard to do that hasn't been done before.
It's funny because I always think about like. I refer to, there's a moment that I refer to as the goosebump moment, like when you're talking about a problem or an issue or a thing. And that, to me, that's when I know I've kind of found that one thing that maybe even just disrupt my own thinking, maybe not be the most world changing idea, but I go like, ah, like that would be really cool if, and it's, you know, it's like shoot for that goosebump moment, right? Because especially it's easy to get in the brainstorm and do what you said, like, let's just do it better than we did it last time. I want to do the thing that's like going to excite me like nothing else. And I'll wait for that. Like, you know, I'll sit in a brainstorm. And if it's an hour has passed, I'm like, let's just keep going a few more minutes. And then suddenly, you know, those clouds disappear. But it's not about me. Roman, thank you for joining us. How can people find out? By the way, why the name Patel? Like, what is that?
It was Kelly Slater that came up with the name, and it stands for Plan to Take On the World.
Oh. Should have done better research.
No, I knew. I was just
because it's also the font is like very comic booky, so I'm like, oh, I just automatically assumed.
I love your trailers too. They look. I feel like I'm watching. I'm gonna go see like a big blockbuster movie.
Okay.
Or like it's like Independence Day. Like when you say that you guys do work in sort of like big, almost hyperbole. Your trailers definitely reflect that. Where
Thank
I feel
you.
Like, oh, like when's that movie coming out? Okay, summer 2017.
Yeah, I mean, we're really big fans of like music festivals, also.
Yeah.
And like, if you guys have ever seen those Tomorrowland music mm-hmm. festivals,
yeah, oh, yeah.
Right. That get like 200 million views.
Yeah,
we're like, how do we create that for business?
By the way, speaking of which, me and Ryan Brenner from your team,
yeah,
when we met. We talked about music for about almost 2 hours. It was like, because we were at South By, and it was like, oh, who's performing? And then it just went down a rabbit hole. I talked to him last week, and we started talking about more, like, the latest albums that have come out. So I totally get, like, the how that could ring true through your organization. Like, hey, we're fans of, like, putting on a show, in a sense.
Yeah, and I mean, look at Ryan. Like, he's, like, he leads membership and partnerships for us. Shout out to Ryan. He heads up our mm-hmm. – he's out in New York. And we work out of the Red Bull offices there, which is fun, too.
Oh, so awesome.
If you ever want to come by. And he's like, we were friends first. You know, he's into art. He's into music. I didn't even know for a long time, like, what he did. We were just friends. And, you know, kind of that led to us kind of working together.
So, very cool.
You know, I'm always looking for those kind of people also, like, that you can start with friendships and then kind of see what kind of bonds, like, kind of get created through that.
I love that.
So we all can do hot yoga together later.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So where can people find out more about Patel Worlds, Roman, you know, where's the onlinings that people can go to?
Yeah, I mean, this is really good timing. We got Worlds, our inaugural. So this is for Worlds. This is chapter one. And it's called The Maiden Voyage.
You're a storyteller.
And the story unfolds over 10 years. And this is our, and which we like to think of as chapters. And so this is obviously chapter one, our maiden voyage. And the reason why we did it is, you know, the greatest thrill about embarking on a maiden voyage is that you're going somewhere new and you're just super excited about where, like, all these new things that are you're going to see. And that kind of that rush and that thrill for discovery keeps you going no matter like what challenges or like what rough waters you may encounter. And so that's really awesome for us because it's a chance to steer our own destiny.
That's right.
And thereby like the destiny of the world. And so although it's like for us, it's our maiden voyage, like our mission, our intention is actually to help all of everyone part of our community at Worlds to help them with their greater journey.
It's right? Amazing.
I need to up my like metaphor game. Like you've just been spitting some really good metaphors over here.
I can't wait to see, you know, the future, the like you from 10 years from now. Like, what will your perspective on
hopefully
the world
hanging
be?
Out with you guys.
I know, right?
Yeah, just having a drink.
Anniversary.
Yeah,
we'll the 10-year like anniversary.
Yes.
The
podcast anniversary.
Yeah, exactly.
It's worlds.us is where anyone in the world could apply. Like, we're just looking for the innovators, the dreamers, the rule breakers. And it's happening soon, like in a week and a half, August 2nd and 3rd in Los Angeles. And it's going to be full, and we're just super pumped and most excited about just like having all these great people be with us to host
Fantastic.
Them, to be a host, you know?
Very cool.
Well, thank you, man, for coming by.
Oh, no, thank you guys.
And thank you, Bianca. You did great.
Bianca's
incredible.
You're natural.
Well, you know.
It's all those mixed up genes you got in there.
It's all of the stuff that's
too much
going
genetics
on
going
here,
on.
Yeah.
You just draw on whatever ancestral
Every
memory
minority,
at any moment.
Like, yeah. You know.
Everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.